Yes, good morning all. It is Tuesday, October 4, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. Hope you enjoyed the long weekend, and certainly Penrith fans did as they bask in the triumph of the club's fourth premiership, 91-2003 last year, and now 2022, 28-12 against Parramatta. It was 18-0 inside half an hour. At half time, and then it was 28-0 with less than 5 minutes to go before a couple of late para tries added some respectability to the scoreline. But all honours with the Panthers, who were just absolutely superb. Dylan Edwards, the Clive Churchill medal. We'll break it down throughout the morning. Loz and Pup, a very good morning to you both. How are you, Lozza?
Yeah, morning, boys. Wonderful performance from over Parramatta. I thought they were terrific. The game was over pretty early. They just had all the running, didn't allow Parramatta into the contest whatsoever. 18-0 down at halftime. You're always going to struggle to come back from that in a grand final. So well done to Penrith going back-to-back. And look, I know they're losing a couple of players next year, but the production line out there with the Panthers is happening. They've won a lot of junior grades. They've got terrific depth, which will hold them in good stead for years to come. Parramatta, well done on making the grand final. I thought it might have been a tighter contest, but they were just completely outplayed by the most dominant team we've seen for a long while.
Morning, Pup.
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. My God, talk about primed and ready. Penrith were just class above. I know Parra's copped a bit of stick about not being able to, you know, play their best footy in the grand final, but I think Penrith were just too good. And it was like they saved their best for the GF. Walked out there full of confidence, ready to go, and the game was over in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was. They just completely dominated possession. At one stage there, I think it was 65-35 or 70-30 or whatever it was in terms of possession, and it was where they were getting the ball to. They just continually wore Parramatta down. It just sucks so much energy out of Parramatta defensively, even, you know, with their big fellas. And when they had the ball, they just didn't have enough effort in them to even create some offloads. They were getting dominated at the ruck. They were getting stuck in their own half. It was difficult to get any field position at all. And they just attacked the game. They went after it. Penrith, they came away as victors and thoroughly deserved it. It was one of the most dominant halves of footy I've seen this year. Yeah, not only in a big grand final, but this year.
It was exactly that, Loz. You'd have to think, as far as performances in grand final history are concerned, that first half was close to perfect.
Yep, they didn't do much wrong. They didn't do much wrong in that first 40 minutes. They were outstanding. And, you know, they were up. They were ready to go. They were full of energy. They started well. Parramatta just couldn't get into the game. And it was a ruthless performance from Penrith. And that's what you want to see from a team who has been in two grand finals, the two previous grand finals. They'd won one, they'd lost one. They knew the feeling, and they weren't going to win that. You just got the sense right from the get-go, right from that opening 10-minute period, that it was going to take something special for Parramatta to win because the Panthers were on.
They tried some things, Parra. Like, I think it was the first tackle kick at one point. So they did some things out of the box, which you said, you know, they got to do.
I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that. Execution could have been a bit better. And timing of the game in terms of when and how and all that type of stuff could have been a little bit better. But that's nitpicking. And take nothing away from Penrith, though. They were just too good. They were too good. And Parramatta, great job getting there. But unfortunately, they saved possibly their worst for their last.
Pat, we spoke about Dylan Edwards last week. Outstanding performance. Worthy Clive Churchill medalist. I think no one can criticise that decision.
Nah, no way. I think he's what an amazing year, and then tops it off. Again, I said it last week. I feel like he has just found his place in this team as well. He complements his team perfectly. Excuse me, and he just runs off, you know, the players that he knows so well. So yeah, they've been consistent. I think that's the one thing they, you know, I know there's been a bit of criticism about the carry on afterwards, but they have to be the best Penrith team ever, don't they, Loz?
Oh, it's pretty hard to disagree with it. But again, you know, their last 3 years have been excellent. But it's also about what their playing group does into the future as well, and solidify their legacy. You know, they've been outstanding for the last, you know, 3 years.
Yeah. What's your take on all the stuff that's happened off the field? post their win.
Look, you'd prefer not to see it. It does come across as arrogant.
Yeah.
It does come across as you're giving no respect to the opposition.
Mm. Is a lot of this, because it's been hard to sort of understand, like they were singing Sweet Caroline. Was that taking the mickey out of Mitchell Pearce and...
Mitchell Moses, sorry.
Oh, mate, I would never clue.
Yeah, it seems like Paul Kent hit him really hard on Fox. But you also, when you've, you know, won major trophies and drank too much and partied and had a good time, just seems like this, everything they're doing, there's a camera on them.
Yeah.
So it's being, stared at.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly right. And look, I'm sure they would, if they had their time over again, some of them, that would look at what they've said and gone, oh, geez, I probably should have shared that in that environment.
Mm.
That would quite possibly been for an environment inside the dressing sheds where no one else could get access to it. But, you know, they live and die by what they say these days. They want to post everything. It does get them in trouble, get themselves in trouble. Mm. But they've got to live with it. And if they're happy to come out and say those type of things, create the rivalry, and they don't care what anyone else says, that's up to them. But I think that most people would think that, you know, Penrith in celebrations, players haven't had any sleep. Mm. They've celebrated long and hard, which they're entitled to do. Should they have said what they said? No.
Mm.
You know, possibly if you're going to say those type of things, say it in the confines of your dressing shed where only you and your teammates can hear it and have a bit of a laugh about it in there. Or a discussion, if you feel it's a real serious discussion you want to have. But I think out in the open, I don't think you should be saying those type of things and being disrespectful at times to your opponent.
Quite a lot of those players won't be celebrating for too long, though, Loz. Even the Penrith players, are they heading with the rest of the Kangaroos squad? I think it's Thursday.
Yeah, I think they leave on Thursday.
Wow, over for a World Cup.
I think they go to camp on Wednesday.
Mm.
Yeah, I think the staff go in today, players in tomorrow, or some of the players will come in tonight, and then possibly have one training session before they jump on the plane. But I wouldn't expect the Penrith or the Parramatta boys to be training.
A squad of 24 that was named yesterday. I could imagine how spirited it was debating and coming up with this squad, Loz, but you can't pick them all. And, you know, we are the strongest rugby league nation on the planet, theoretically, and we deserved favourites, although some of these squads, particularly the New Zealand squad also announced yesterday, looks particularly strong. But no place for the Clive Churchill medalist Dylan Edwards, also the Dally M medalist Nicho Hynes. So tell us a bit about the difficulties, I guess, in picking the squad.
Well, the big one, I suppose, is Dylan Edwards, given the performance he's had this season. And the last couple of games, he's been terrific and capped it off with the Clive Churchill medal on Sunday night. Versatility obviously played against him. You've got James Tedesco, who's the captain of the Kangaroos side. He's going to be your number one fullback. And then if you get injuries on tour, you've got guys like Latrell Mitchell and Cam Munster who can go back and play fullback. So I think versatility cost Dylan. The fact that we didn't believe we could move and put him into another position if needed. And you only have 24 players and there's special circumstances. So we've named three other guys and Dylan is one of those guys. But you've got to have some special circumstances for those guys to come into the squad. And that could be COVID. Or it could be you're out of players in a certain position. Dylan Edwards, the fact that he can't sort of play a number of positions has worked against him. Possibly with Nicho Hynes, it came down to him and sort of Benny Hunt as that utility. And Ben Hunt, you know, plays as a halfback. He can play as a 9, and he can also play as a 13. We've seen him do that in Origin as well. So, unfortunately for Nicho, he missed out as well.
I've got to say, though, I reckon one of the performances of the weekend that should not be glossed over was Lauren Jackson, who at age 41, in her final game for Australia, scored 30 points and ensured that Australia secured bronze at the World Cup. They beat Canada 95-65 after a heartbreaking loss to China on Friday night. They lost by 2 points. But Lauren Jackson just thought one more time, less than 24 hours after that heartbreaking defeat, I'm just going to turn it on at age 41 and just dominate it. Phenomenal. And was carried off the court. That was some of the great scenes of the weekend too, as far as Australian sports concerned. It was awesome.
Oh, great comeback by Lauren Jackson. She's one of our greatest sports women, sports persons. And she's had an outstanding career. And to do what she's done, you know, being retired and then come back on the biggest stage and deliver the way she did was pretty special. Talking about basketball, did you see the Adelaide 36ers?
Yeah.
What they were able to do over the weekend. I know it's only a trial game, so to speak. But to beat the Phoenix Suns, who did start with a lot of their superstars. I mean, their salary cap compared to the 36ers' salary cap is massive. I think it's, what, close to $300 million or something in it, compared to under $2 million. So that's an amazing effort from the 36ers.
Yeah, they did. They
some of their guys shot extremely well.
Mm. We got Brad Rosen on later this morning. So, yeah, they beat them 134 to 124. Don't think the Suns were playing defense in their first preseason match, but the Sixers turned it on. And front page of the Daily Telegraph, Panther Zone, Top Guns, Maverick movie, magic inspires Penrith's NRL glory. So they've had this top secret mission inspired by the Top Gun sequel. There's a picture of Nathan Cleary, Iceman, and with his, what, navy cap on and... Your son, have you seen it yet, Loz?
I've seen the sequel. Yes.
Brilliant.
Finally seen it and thoroughly enjoyed it. But no, it's good. I mean, most teams have themes going through the seasons or themes in a semi-final. And I think they went to a mid-season camp where they went and watched it as a group, the movie. And then they decided that was going to be their sort of theme for the rest of the season. And it's worked well. They've timed their run to perfection. Cleary was class on the night. He guided them around the paddock. I thought Fisher Harris and Leota up front were outstanding.
We had Leota early.
Oh, geez, tough. Spencer Linu coming off the interchange bench. They just had so many dominant players on the night. Brian Toa, geez, what a performance from him from a winger.
Yeah.
You know, he and Dylan Edwards for mine were the two best players on the field. The amount of work they got through. And we all know what was coming. We all know that's what Penrith like to do in the backfield is get their back five involved. But those two in particular, they just kept coming and coming and coming. Got them out of trouble. I think Toa scored a couple of tries or scored a try. And Dylan Edwards was just constantly in the game.
Back page of the telly, sunburn. Eels greats bristle over taunts from Happy Perth. Panthers, spoke about it before, probably a couple of players who would love a couple of moments back. James Fisher-Harris, what did he say? He said, Para are our sons, and then we had a We Hate Para chant at the fan day yesterday. I'll tell you one thing, though, next year when these two teams play each other, what do you think we're going to be wheeling out all that week again?
They're going to play each other twice.
Was there beef before the game? I didn't think these two teams hated each other this much.
Yeah, like, I think it's just great rivalry.
It's fan-induced a lot, this.
The Battle of the West, you know. We're more West than what you are.
What about Appy Coruscant when he walks into the Tigers after, sort of scoffing at the Tigers, having a bit of a laugh about his chances there of winning a ring, a premiership ring?
It's a bit like I said before. I mean, it didn't need to be said. If you're going to say that, Appy, do it inside the dressing sheds where no one else is going to sort of see it, only other than your teammates, and have a bit of a laugh about it. Look, you know what? I don't take offence to that. If you're a Tiger supporter, you might. Mm. But me, sitting here now, I think I could take that as him just mucking around. And he's a professional. Once he gets to the Tigers, he'll switch on and he'll rip in. And he's a wholehearted player, Appy Coruscant. You know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get from him. But if you're a Tiger supporter, it's just not a good look if you've got a player coming to your club and he's laughing and scoffing. But we had similar with, no, not similar, but, you know, I think Brandon Smith got in trouble there when he did a interview podcast with signing for the Roosters and how much he wanted to win a comp for the Roosters.
It didn't mean he went back and didn't try with the Melbourne Storm.
He went back. But again, it's just not a good look.
Now, back page of the Sydney Morning Herald, he could hardly walk, he was very sick, and in the interview here, Penn Gilly and Michael Chemis, I think they've spoken with Ivan Cleary's wife, and she went into detail about how crook he was, during the year when he had an infection, didn't he? And was basically bedridden, yeah. Couldn't get off the couch for a period of time. So that sounded pretty nasty because he looks like a very fit man, Ivan Cleary, but up off the canvas himself to coach the side throughout the season.
Yeah, well, he's had some health issues, hasn't he, Ivan? So hopefully, you know, he can get a bit of a rest now and get himself back in some, you know, good physical condition. But what he's been able to do out there with Penrith has been unbelievable. And we not only talk about the first grade squad, but, you know, the pathway system that they've been able to set up and create. A lot of people involved in doing that. It's taken some time to get right. But now that they've got it right, you can just see them having success there for a number of years to come.
Also back page of the Herald, Meninga embraces the pressure of retaining Roos World Cup crown. And that squad, as we mentioned, announced yesterday. Steve on the text line, morning. Heard Mal say Cherry Evans is the starting half for Australia. I would have thought Cleary deserves the spot having won the grand final. Can Laurie offer any thoughts on this? Thanks, Steve. I don't think he out and out said Daly Cherry Evans.
Not in our discussions.
Is the starting halfback. He said he's just the incumbent. Point he's the incumbent. Yeah,
In my discussions with Mal, no, he hasn't indicated that Cherry will be the starting halfback over Nathan Cleary. What I do know is that both those men will get an opportunity in the seven jersey, as will a lot of the players. They'll all play. Mal's got an eye on giving a lot of these players opportunities, at least one or two games, and he's going to then look forward to that quarter final where he will then look to pick his best team.
And on the back page of the Australian, Kangaroos reward eludes Dylan. And we've mentioned it before, Dylan Edwards couldn't crack that Kangaroos squad, and his lack of versatility, I guess, working against him in that squad of 24. But James Tedesco to captain the side. So that is one change, because Daly Cherry Evans was the incumbent captain, wasn't he? I think he was.
Well, Daly was the incumbent seven, and I know that he possibly was the captain. I'm unsure. I know they've changed the captaincy with James Tedesco, but it was 3 years ago, I think, the last time they played. So off the top of my head, I think it was Daly. But I know that James is, you know, established himself as the number one leader in the game. His performance for the Roosters has been outstanding, as they have been for New South Wales. And, you know, with James, you know he's going to be in the team. With Teddy, you know, with Daly, if you named him as captain, you'd be unsure of whether he was going to make the starting side. So, I'm sure that's a reason why Mal probably look to change that as well.
Here's one for you, Loz. Liam Martin gets in. I guess he was in a battle with Sean Lane. Did the grand final performance seal that selection for Liam Martin? Because were they neck and neck pretty much heading into that grand final? Because he was superb, Liam Martin.
Yeah, Liam Martin had a really good year, as did Sean Lane at the back end of the year. I thought he was terrific. Mm. But I think that, you know, Liam Martin, the fact that he can play as a middle as well, worked in his favour. And I think I said earlier this morning about if you can be versatile when you go on a tour, it certainly helps your cause. Because you've only got 24 players. And to get an extra player into the squad while you're over there, there's got to be special circumstances. So, you know, if you've run out of players in specialised positions or COVID or something like that. So the fact that Liam Martin can play as an edge back rower, can play either side, or he can play through the middle, that helped in his favour over Sean Lane.
Now, one of our listeners saying, no, Boyd was captain, not DCE, Boyd Cordner. Is he still there in 2019? Anyway, James Tedesco's captain now. Mm. And the joint vice captains are Cameron Murray and Isaiah Yeo for that squad that heads to the UK on Thursday. It's about to tick over 6 o'clock. Give us a call, 13 53 53. Not doing heroes and villains today, but give us a call regardless. Let us know what you thought of the GF. 0419 767 272. Also, what you think of the Kangaroo squad and our chances heading towards the World Cup in the UK as they head over there in a couple of days' time. Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Now, the weekend started fantastically for those who were playing at Moonee Valley about a quarter past five Friday evening when the elderly part-owned Foxy Cleopatra walked in, absolutely walked in, and she is now a $15 chance for the VRC Oaks. Of course, during the carnival there at Flemington, $15. So what's that? She's pretty much on the, well, she's Lickety Split, which won on Saturday, and So Dazzling. They're the $6 joint favourites. So she's about sixth on the sixth line, three, four, five. Yep, the sixth joint sixth line of betting. There you are, Loz. Well done. Congratulations.
She won well too.
She was.
Wasn't hurt. A strong field, by the way.
Take the victory.
I am taking the victory.
Yeah, so where are we going?
Never in doubt, the Fox.
No.
Where are we going next?
Well, tell you where we're going next. We're going to the Ethereal States.
Ooh, Caulfield Cup Day. Yes. 2,000 metres of Oaks, very prominent Oaks lead up.
Yes. I was looking at some of the previous winners of the Ethereal States.
Go on, rattled them
off. No. I got a little bit too far in front of myself.
But that's what you do.
You know. But no. She had a good victory on Friday night. I had the whole place on it. So that was good. Second start. But, it's exciting, you know, that you've got a young horse that's running okay at this point in time.
Trainer's report post-race?
They're very happy. Very happy with the performance, you know. Just going to start to stay calm with it now, you know.
Get excited now.
Yeah.
Mm. Great day.
Well, we did lead people in early. They did get, if they thought it was going to run in the Oaks...
Yeah.
And qualify. We're still going to qualify too, by the way.
Yeah.
Price.
She ended up, I think it was $1.70 on the tote on Friday night. She was heavily backed late. Yeah. I managed to get $2.30, which was a lot less than
There would have been 50 in our group that all backed her.
Mm.
Well, they're all cheering, I know that.
There were scenes. The venue we were at. Incredible.
It was good.
It was great.
But no, she ran really well, you know, so it's sort of exciting, but I mean, you know what racing's like. You can always find something goes wrong with a horse and then you come up against a better field and they bring you back to earth pretty quickly, so. But look, Foxy, just a wonderful name. Wonderful name, and she will be a punter's friend.
Well, she was the punter's friend on Friday night, no doubt about that. Ellsberg and Top Ranked, a dead heat in the Tab Epsom. Don't see that offered in a Group 1.
No, well, you thought it was going to be, because they took so long. They took so long to give the decision. And I saw Annabelle out there and I thought, does she know that her Top Ranked is one here? Or then I saw it looked over and I saw Gerald Ryan with his ownership group and they all had smiles in their face. I'm thinking, well, hang on, what's going on here? And then I sort of realised that, this is going to be a dead heat here, so well done to all connections.
No compromise winning the Metropolitan. Zoukotcha was superb winning the Flight Stakes. Lost and Running beaten Improved Marzu, and Mask Crusader flew home there in the Premier. So those three, you'd have to say, all in the running, provided, of course, Nature Strip has an off day, because that's what I think we're all banking on for the connections who were... amongst the other slots there for the Everest. You're relying on Nature Strip to have an off day, but Lost and Running certainly going very well, winning the Premier. And Smoke and Romans down south won the Turnbull at odds over the weekend as well. But great weekend's racing. Just hopefully this rain forecast doesn't look good this week, but let's hope the forecasters have it wrong. By the way, on the text line here, morning, Losmido Clarky, could you name the Kangaroos list for those of us driving and can't look it up, says Polly. Okay, I'll read the list out to you then. Josh Adokar, Matt Burton. This is in alphabetical order. Adokar, Burton, Regan Campbell-Gillard, Pat Carrigan, Daly Cherry-Evans, Nathan Cleary, Lindsay Collins, Ruben Cotter, Angus Crichton, Tino Farr, Sue Malawi, Campbell Graham, Harry Grant, Valentine Holmes, Ben Hunt, Liam Martin, Latrell Mitchell, Cameron Munster, Cameron Murray, Jeremiah Nenai, Murray Taulangi, James Tedesco, Jake Trebojevich, Jack Whiten, Isaiah Yo. And standby players, Dylan Edwards, Nico Hines, and Damien Cook. Our man Cookie just couldn't quite crack it.
No, he couldn't. I'll give you one here, boys, which I find hard to comprehend, but you've got to give them a number. So they go on a touring number. So that's their number for every game.
I don't get it.
What do you mean?
So if you're touring number, squad number one, you play in one regardless of whether you're a fullback, winger, 5'8", yes.
You're kidding.
Found this out yesterday.
Well, that's just ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
What do you mean? So that's what you're wearing your jersey on the field.
You have to put in your 24.
So surely that's got to go. You have to pick your top 17. Because you're not, like, or do you go alphabetical order?
Well, you go alphabetical order.
No way.
Okay.
So Tedesco's playing fullback and he's captain and he could be number 16.
Well, he's number
16.
He's number 20.
He's number 20.
Number 19, actually.
So they'll either do that or they will either go on Tedesco 1,
they got
Cam Murray, Isaiah 2 or 3. But you don't know what your team is going to be.
But I reckon
you go on your team for the first game and then...
But if you pick your top 17, what you think it's going to be, let's assume three quarters is right.
They want you to go 1 to 24 straight up, and that's your number for the tournament.
That is ridiculous. Tedesco's 21, sorry.
Yeah, you can't, you can't run out in 21. He has to run out in number 1.
I'm not picking my side for the whole tournament because I don't know what my best side is, and I want to give everyone a chance.
Hmm. Which is the... fair way.
Well, that's the way you take over
a
tour.
Cherry Evans or Cleary, one of them's not playing in 7. Or they both might be playing in 7.
Yeah.
Mate, that is a ridiculous rule.
On this list, Cherry Evans is 5 and Cleary 6. So we're going to be watching Cherry Evans in the 5 jersey playing at halfback.
That is
ridiculous. I'm telling you. That's, they wanted...
rubbish.
They wanted 1 to 24. And they said the list that you submit with that on there, that is their tour number.
Give us a call, 1353-53. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, boys. How are you going?
Yeah, really well, thanks, mate. What have you got for us?
Just a few things, and maybe Loz can get a bit of light. I think looking at the way they ruled that obstruction on Sunday night, and it didn't impact the game, thankfully. Penrith had the game won at that point. Loz, do you think they need to do an overhaul, maybe limit the bunker's involvement in the game in the off-season, maybe look at things like the obstruction rule, look at things like judiciary, it's very inconsistent this year.
Well, it's funny, Alex, because everyone will tell you it's more black and white, but after the weekend... seeing that one with Mitch Moses, everyone that you speak to would tell you that Mitch Moses didn't have an opportunity to get across and make that tackle. Now, he probably was going to make the tackle, and it wasn't going to make any difference in the game. But the way they've ruled on that all season has been that's a no try. You denied him the opportunity to move across on that line to be involved in a tackle. So I don't know how they got that one wrong. I think they do need to look at it, Alex, and overhaul it. Greater minds than me will obviously sit down at the end of the season and work out what they need to do with the bunker. But I get confused as anyone. And when people ask me and... what I thought of that decision the other night, whether it was a try or not, straight away I said, oh, that's a no try. And I was going on what we'd seen all season and what I'd seen in that game. I just said, oh, that's a no try. So when it came up a try, I was like, oh, righto. you get confused. But to answer your point, Alex, I think they will, mate. I think they have to look at it because there's been too much confusion surrounding it.
Judiciary system, Loz, it was very inconsistent this year. Would you agree?
Yes, I think it was. I think it was. But I think Graham Annesley will tell you that they got, I think he wheels out the stat all the time, 90-odd% of the decisions right. But from a footy fan watching, you look at it and go, well, that's a try or no try. And I think they've got a number of decisions wrong. And I hate when the bunker intervenes. I hate how long it takes.
Yep.
And for me, the frustration, Alex, and I've been on about this for a long period of time, the length of the game. The game is supposed to go for 80 minutes, but it goes for 2 hours. Mm. And that's a frustration of mine, the stoppages that we have.
Particularly that Roosters-South game in, what, week one of the finals. How long did that go for? I think it was 2 hours and 8 minutes or something like that. No, thanks for the call, Alex. Morning, Dennis.
Hello, boys. How you going?
Yeah, really well, thanks.
Laurie, you've got to give yourself an uppercut.
Why is that, mate?
But how would you say that you're not got the brace? The trouble is you footballers are not running the game. Yeah? When Sterlo gave it away, he said, I'm confused. I can't take any more.
Yeah, I was confused with that one the other night. Again, it never cost Parramatta, but the way that we've seen that ruled all season has been a no try.
Well, the commentators even said that, you know, through the year, whatever.
Yeah.
In the other games, that was try. That was, you know, whatever, you know. Yeah. But the losing side, how good was Clint Gutherson?
Oh, he's just a marvellous club player, Gutho, isn't he? Like, he just gives his heart and soul to that organisation. I think they said, Dennis, he played with a broken hand.
Mm.
I read or heard somewhere that he played with a broken hand, but didn't want anyone to know about it grand final week. And he just puts his body on the line. He's an inspirational leader, Gutho. I think Parramatta have got themselves a beauty there, a good leader. We're lucky enough to have him on our program every Tuesday. Obviously, we won't have him on this week, but no, he's wonderful.
Good on you, Dennis. And I guess for both these clubs now, they're going to have some interesting negotiations coming up because we know that Penrith are losing Kickout, Corris out, Cameron Serraldo as well, but they've got to try and keep Stephen Crichton, Brian To'o, Liam Martin, there's some others as well that I'm sure they'd like to keep beyond next year.
Can I also give a rap to Mitch Kenny? He was outstanding in the opening 20 minutes of that grand final. He was just whacking blokes. And I know he's a different player to Appy Corrissau, and they will miss his creativeness from dummy half and, you know, his skill and the ability to work markers over. But Mitch Kenny, I mean, that formula, a lot of people are saying that, you know, it wasn't working, but it worked on grand final night because he took the sting out of the game and was brutal in defence and did his work and serviced Cleary and Luai really well. And then when Appy came on the field, he just got them to another level. So the thing about Penrith is they've got a number of players coming through. When you win grand finals, when you have success, you're always going to lose players. But the key is to be able to replace them as well. And that's what Penrith have got the advantage of having these players coming through successful systems, being able to step up, fill the breach, and they don't miss a beat. You know, you look at Charlie Staines coming in for Taylan May in the grand final. Yeah, they didn't really miss a beat. You know, Mitch Kenny starting at hooker for Appy Corris out. Their opening 20 minutes was as good as we've seen. And that's with Mitch Kenny starting. So I think they've just got this confidence about them at the moment that next man up gets the job done. They fit into the system so well. We've always waxed lyrical about what Melbourne are able to do, bringing in another player to fit in a role within their squad, within their team. The Roosters have been the same over the last decade. Penrith are starting to get that now. They're starting to have this advantage where they have good players, good depth. They can bring anyone in at any time and they still get the job done.
$4 favourites with Tab to win it next year.
Oh, it's a different year next year and everyone starts off equal. And again, when you've won two, there's a bit more pressure if you want to try and go three in a row, obviously. But I can understand why after such a dominant display in a grand final. That opening 40 minutes in that grand final, they were just too good.
Oh, just very close to perfect, Penrith, in that first 40.
They got everything right. They got everything right. You know, the biggest surprise coming out of the other grand final was the amount of dominance they had. They didn't win by more than 16.
Scoreline flat at Parramatta.
Yes.
No doubt about that. Yeah. No doubt. Although they were lucky not to be down 30 at halftime. What was it, 18-0?
18-0.
Oh.
It could have been. It could have been 30.
You would have taken 18-0. They were,
if you're Parramatta, you're going in at halftime 18-0, you're actually happy. You're going, well, boys, this could have been a lot worse.
So, naturally, the debate has started, where does this Penrith team rate in its history, and whether it compares to the 91, the team that beat your side, Loz, or 2003, whether they're underrated as well. This team's gone back-to-back. I guess back-to-back is the thing that gets this team in favour, I suppose. But you go back to 91 and that Penrith side competing with the likes of your Raiders, the emerging Broncos side of that era as well. And we're talking, there's immortals playing at that time.
Yeah, it's the thing that I look at the moment is that Penrith are just so far above everyone else. So obviously they have to enter the conversation of being one of the great teams. Then you talk about whether they're the best Penrith team, because I always rated that Penrith side of 90, 91, that era. And when I look at Penrith, for me, Brad Fittler could be considered an immortal at some stage. Mm-hmm. And the one that possibly gets overlooked in terms of those type of conversations is Brandy. You know, he was that good.
Mm.
So you look at this current side and you go, well, you know, Nathan Cleary is on the way there, and you know, who else in this team could possibly get there? Mm. But when you win two competitions in a row, there's no doubt that you are an elite footy team. But I hate comparing eras.
Yeah. Mm.
Because the era that I played in, you know, I think was wonderful football, all right? But I look at the vision compared to today's vision as chalk and cheese.
It's a different game, isn't it?
Mm. And those players are more skillful than what we ever were, you know, and they see the game a lot better. Yet we always thought that we played in the best era. And as you keep going through the eras, and when we get in 20 years' time, we'll look back on today's game and go, geez, how far has the game grown? And look at these skillful, athletic players. So it's always difficult, because if you go back and look at the 60s compared to today, you go, well, you know, just a different game.
Mm.
So it's like when someone asks you who's the best player. It's always difficult, because you can come up with 10, you can come up with 30 if you wanted to. There's not much difference between the best, but winning two grand finals in a row, in the modern era, they're one of the great teams. And they've been consistently good for 3 years now.
Another debate which I saw raging, particularly on social media, after I think Andrew John said it on the broadcast, that Nathan Cleary had gone past Greg Alexander as Penrith's greatest ever player. But as someone who played a lot against Brandy and with him as well.
Brandy was one of the most naturally gifted players you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he could do things that Nathan Cleary couldn't do. Nathan can do things that Brandy couldn't do. But Brandy had longevity, and Nathan will as well. I just think it's hard because, you know what, they're two different style of players.
Mm.
Brandy was a real runner of the ball. He had blistering acceleration. He had a wonderful chip and chase. He could cover tackle. He had that versatility. He could play fullback as well as halfback. And he was a gun. But Nathan Cleary, to do what he's been doing at the moment and the control that he plays with, has been first class. And I think, for me, when I watch Nathan, he's just got that calmness on the footy field, and that's what holds them all together. But again, I hate comparing. At this stage, I wouldn't have Nathan in front of Brandy, no.
Hmm. It's the inevitable comparisons. I know that you would get asked all the time as well, pup.
Well, it's cricket, there's too many variables.
Hmm.
Like, you go Sir Donald Bradman versus Sachin Tendulkar. Hang on a second. You played with completely different cricket bats, different conditions. They played with uncovered pitches. Only played Bradman is certainly majority of his cricket in either Australia or England. Uncomparable. Can't compare. You know, these days international cricket, you play in so many different countries.
Mm.
A lot of the time, batting wise, the wickets are flatter than what they were back in the day as well. So yeah, I think it's about actually respecting this generation and these teams and what they do, and never disrespecting the past, the people that have come before us. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things. We're always going to talk about it. Great for a chat in the pub, but I don't think it's fair.
No. I mean, people could look back on the 90s compared to today's game, and if you're a current day player, you'd be watching that video thinking, geez, we could pick holes in this team.
Yeah.
they would have no fears whatsoever
yeah.
because they're just trained differently. Yeah. And play differently and see things differently, that they would look at the setup in defence and just go, wow, we'd put 40 on this mob.
Isn't it amazing?
That's how far the game has changed.
The difference
and it changes
in the ruck,
different era.
The difference in the ruck in your, when you were playing laws compared to now.
It was more two-man tackles and it was sort of tackled. You didn't really... Yeah. The idea was still to try and slow them down, but you didn't have as much focus on it back then as what you do now.
Mm. They've got some Premier League on at the moment and Leicester City, a 3-0 up against Nottingham Forest. And, only 39 minutes gone in that fixture this morning. What about in the Manchester Derby over the weekend? City beat United 6-3. And how about this for an excuse for not playing your superstar player? So Erik ten Hag, the United manager, said after the match he didn't want to bring Cristiano Ronaldo on off the bench for the match, quote, out of respect for his big career. So the manager didn't want to play him because they're obviously getting humiliated and he didn't want to throw Ronaldo into the mix. How do you reckon that's going to wash with their supporters? I mean, I'm obviously not a United supporter, but I mean, seriously.
Well, what's the end game with Ronaldo? Are they trying to sell him, well, get rid of him, or they just can't?
Don't know at the moment because Ronaldo sort of gave indications he wanted to leave. Mm. Ten Hag said he's part of our plans.
But he's not playing him.
And here he is in a Manchester derby. Yeah. It's a Manchester derby. They're getting hammered. He's on the bench and you're reluctant to put him out there. So I don't know what's going on. I can't figure it out.
If you respect his career, he should be starting.
Well, you get him on the park at some point. You would have thought in a match of that ilk. But anyway, what about the Australia Cup on the weekend? The final two at Combank Stadium. 2-0, so MacArthur and Dwight York, they get some silverware ahead of the start of the A-League season. They beat Sydney United, but it's a match which has been marred Sydney United, they've been sent a show cause notice due to the behaviour of some supporters there at Combank Stadium. Firstly, they disrespected the welcome to country, yelling out during it. And then there were fans using Nazi salutes. So Football Australia said to be, well, they are investigating, of course, and I'm sure some of those fans, there's been calls for life bans, and they're the sort of scenes we don't want to see in Australian football. So hopefully they're found and taken out because that is, let's face it, it's 2022, please. So it's a shame that, you know, we had a match where we had an NPL club represented, and we get stuff like that happening in the stands. So that was disappointing for sure. But well done, certainly, to Dwight York and his MacArthur side ahead of the start of the A-League season. Cricket season's underway as well, pup. We've got a Sheffield Shield game on at the moment between WA and New South Wales. New South Wales sending a bat over there in Perth. They still play at the Wacker in Sheffield Shield, don't they? Pretty sure they
do. Yeah, they play majority of their games there. I think they only use Optus for...
Internationals, Big Bash as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
New South Wales rolled for 180. The only player amongst the runs was Curtis Patterson, their captain, 72. Lance Morris, 5 for 36, and Joel Parris, 3 for 39. In response, though, New South Wales have got WA, 2 for 18. Bancroft amongst the players out for 2. And Ben Dwarshus with 2 for 8 off 4 overs. So that is underway, the Sheffield Shield.
Did you see that one day game? With New South Wales and WA?
They got rolled for 76.
76. So it'd be fair to say batting at the moment is not a strength of New South Wales. But that's
there
a poor
might be
score,
a
isn't it?
In the wicket as well. But yeah, it's not. You don't want to start your season like that.
No, not when you're getting rolled for 76 and they get the runs with 1 for 77.
You're mad toss to lose.
Still looks a chance that Cameron Green might have, well, might end up in this World Cup squad. Clarkie, Marcus Stoinis is still injured.
Yeah, I think they're given, certainly Stoinis, I know Mitch Marsh is back playing, but they're given the guys every chance to be fit. Seems like they wanted to stay as consistent as they could with the 15 they picked for the previous World Cup in the UAE, where they won the T20 World Cup. I think there's only one change to that. So they're giving them every chance. But yeah, if somebody doesn't come up, you'd like to think Cameron Green has to be next in line. Whether it's a batsman doesn't pull up or an all-rounder.
Surely.
Yeah. Mm. When's that series start? West Indies v Australia.
Wednesday night. There's only two matches. It was two, and then I think we play three against England.
Yeah. In these five games, really, I reckon we're looking at one thing and one thing only. That's Finchie making runs. Win, lose, or draw, irrelevant in these games. Everyone would be focused on this World Cup. These would be like trial games.
I feel like we've been saying that for 2 years.
Yeah. Finchie needs some runs leading into this first game.
It does feel like that. Mm. Aaron Finch needs to score runs. Finch needs to score runs.
Yeah.
Well, and that's Rady's captaincy, obviously.
Well, I think if he wasn't captain, I think he mightn't have got the length of time he's got.
Mm. Did you play a lot of T20?
No, not that much. I played a bit for Australia.
No. Well, I was just going to ask, in terms of captaincy.
Hardest format to captain.
Yeah.
Because you don't get time to make up for a mistake. So you're making decisions every ball, really, around who's bowling, field placements, batting orders, whatever it is, but you don't get the time, like you do in a test match, to, geez, I probably got that wrong, or I've got to make a little change here, and everything happens really quick. But most exciting as well.
Just some in racing as well, some Everest news, Tab Everest news. So Snap Dancer's out with a hoof problem. So that's a real blow for slot holder Inglis, who will be scrambling to fill that slot. So you've got Godolphin and James Harran also still to fill slots. Private Eye, though, that was a good win on Saturday. Loz and the Gill guy there at Flemington. It's an $18 chance with Tab for the Everest. So that was a good win first up. So you have to think of slot holders looking very closely at Private Eye. But not much time left, is there? Godolphin, Paul Lely still in the mix there. Kevin Tari's been mentioned as well. And not sure what James Harran's thinking. Maybe he's going towards Private Eye, but Inglis will have to find. They obviously want to choose a horse which has gone through their sales. Mm. So that is getting desperate for the slot holders.
Well, it is, but you know, anything can happen between now and then. But all the major players, so to speak, have been taken. And a lot of them ran on the weekend. And you mentioned them before, you know, Mars Crusader, Lost and Running, and Marzu. They all ran terrifically well leading into the Everest. And they'll be primed for the Everest. But, you know, taking on Nature Strip is a different challenge in itself, because he's proven himself for a number of years now as the best sprinter here in this country and overseas. It's exciting, isn't it? And of course, we just don't know what type of track we're going to be running on. If we're looking at the weather we're about to receive this weekend with the amount of rain, it's possibly going to be a heavy track. It's going to be one of these surfaces that's got plenty of give in it, because this weekend's racing will be on a heavy track for sure.
Give us a call, 1353 53. Send us a text, 0419 767 272. Just some news overnight as well. Cowboys and Samoan forward Luciano Leilua was yesterday charged with assault and damaging property. Allegedly, the victim is a 26-year-old woman that's known to him, and he's been bailed to face court in a week's time in Campbelltown. The incident occurred in southwest Sydney, so that's not good news, certainly for Luciano Leilua and also the Samoan team heading towards the World Cup. Also, the Jillaroo squad was named yesterday as well. There were 13 debutants in their squad of the 24, and they'll be coached by Brad Donald, and there's three co-captains, Kezzy Apps, Ali Briginshaw, and Semi Bremner. They've got four Knights players in that team, Billy Boyle, Tamika Upton, Yasmin Clydesdale, and Caitlin Johnston. And the Knights, of course, beat Parramatta in the NRLW Grand Final on Sunday, 32-12. You see the scenes of them coming back through Macca's in their full playing kit on the way back up to Newcastle. They were in the restaurant.
Oh,
yeah. in their full kit.
Love it. Boots on.
Boots on.
Yeah, done that before.
Nothing like a celebration, Mitto. Like a celebration. And well done to the girls too. They played in front of possibly their biggest ever crowd. Mm. And it would have been exciting for them. I saw Adam Elliott in the crowd. And he had a tear.
Yeah,
in his
had
eye.
A teary.
When his partner Millie Boyle made the speech after the game. So well done to Ronnie Griffiths and the team up there in Newcastle. They've been a standout performer in the women's competition, and it's only going from strength to strength. And there's more young girls now playing football than ever before. And it's great to see they're getting an opportunity and getting an opportunity on the big stage as well.
Craig, good morning.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you.
That's good. Want to pump up Jeff a little bit this morning about a great year football-wise with the lock. But the reason for the call, I wanted to big shout out to Lauren Jackson and what she achieved at 41 years of age. What an absolute legend, and how many young girls has she influenced to take on that great game of basketball.
Yeah, look, especially considering she knew it was the last game. They came off a devastating loss Friday night. I saw the end of that game against China. And there they were, what, played less than 24 hours later. And for her to just steel herself and go, right, I'm going to give this one huge crack at age 41 after, you know, obviously a huge comeback after, what, 6 years retired from the national side. And then to completely dominate on Saturday against Canada. One of the great stories of the weekend, wasn't it?
And the other thing is she sort of came into this Australian side when they were broken because of the Liz Cambage stuff. And it looks as though she's brought unity back into this basketball team, and there's a sense of togetherness. And while, you know, she came back and helped on the court, I reckon she's just been as influential off the court in being able to heal and bring a team back together, refocus and get the culture reset. And I think that's exactly what she's done. And she is so well respected, not only in the basketball world, but I reckon as a sports person here in this country, she's one of our greatest. Mm.
Adam Pengilly, a very good morning to you. How are you, mate?
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. First of all, Jared, I've got to offer congratulations to Loz, scratching Foxy Cleopatra 383 times.
We found the right race for her, Adam.
Yeah, you did, Loz. You did. How many acceptance fees have you paid over the weeks to get to that point?
Well, we've paid it off. Now. Paid the acceptance fees off.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't become a usual pattern.
Yes. No, very well done, mate. She was very impressive. She might be going places, I reckon.
Just keep a lid on it, mate, eh? Well, you blokes in the media, you want to talk her up?
Oh, here we go. Go on, tell us again. Where's she going next?
The ethereal.
Yeah, okay, very good. I'll tell you what, Jared, it does make you feel a little bit sick, though, the two blokes sitting next to you.
Oh, mate.
Unbelievable, isn't it? They just get into horse racing ownership, and they've got horses they're winning in the city and on Group 1 pass and everything like that. It's, unbelievable.
And, you know, if I got into one now, to be shin sore in the paddock 16 times, and the bills will just keep mounting.
Well, Adam, I got pretty excited when T-Bus walked into the room. He was with us on Friday.
Yeah. And he I couldn't believe it.
And I said, mate, what do you reckon? He said, well, I can't do much more. So I was like, oh, here we go. And I was that nervous. I was that nervous watching her, but coming around the bend.
Bought the house down.
Oh, yeah. We would have had about 50 or 60 of us there in this room, and we were just cheering her home.
Yeah, it was great it scenes. Was
fantastic. And she had to do a bit of work, didn't she, Loz, early? Worried. Blake had to try and do a bit of work to find a spot, but she was too good for that lot. So well done, mate. Look forward to this year.
Yeah. The further the better, apparently.
Yes, yep. See you on the right path.
Well, you go. A mile to 2,000 next star with the ethereal, so bring it on. Now, great scenes as well at Randwick on Saturday. I love the shot of Huey Bowman and Brenton Abdullah bracing as Ellsberg and top ranked, dead heated in the Tab Epsom.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it, Jared? I must admit, going into the race, it felt like it was a bit underwhelming in Epsom, only 10 runners, and you thought, it's not the strength of field or depth of field we used to get in the past, but it certainly produced an outstanding finish, and you just knew the longer that went on, that photo finish, the more likely it was going to be a dead heat. And fantastic scene to see Brenton and Huey come back to scale together. It was great to see the connections of both horses, Ellsberg and Top Rank, together with each other in the mounting yard, waiting for the result, and a really fairy tale finish in the end. So well done to both horses. I thought Hinge was pretty good there. She got squeezed out late in the piece there, but running third. But taking nothing away from the two winners, the dead heat. First time, was it the third time, I think, Jared, in the history of the Epsom has been a dead heat, and first time for 90-odd years, I think. So, amazing result.
Another quiet day for Chris Waller.
Oh, it's incredible, isn't it, Loz? He loves these big days, doesn't he? A couple of group ones. We got you, first of all, on the flight stakes. She was extremely impressive. She's just a typical sort of slower maturing three-year-old for Chris Waller. I didn't see her much as a two-year-old. And obviously, for the spring and the three-year-old, she's sort of really come into her own, and she was real dominant there on the weekend. So I don't know what path they sort of take from now. I wonder where they send her for a spell to the paddock, but she's definitely done her job this preparation. She's outstanding. Fireburn probably a little bit disappointing. They didn't finish off the race the way that many thought she would. And then we moved on to the Metropolitan, and No Compromise was outstanding, wasn't he? He's a horse that I've had a lot of time for this preparation, just waiting to get to his right race, and he found it there on the weekend. Another extremely close finish, and I could have sworn when I went past the post it was close to another dead heat with LaDon de V, but the judge found the margin, and he's now Group 1 winner as well.
Smoke and Romans won at, what, $20 plus down south for the Ma Eustace team in the Turnbull Stakes at Flemington.
Yeah, talk about horses coming a long way, Jared, in a short space of time. This bloke was running around in, what was it, Country Cups in the last 6 to 12 months. So he's now Group 1 winner in the Turnbull Stakes. I will say, Jared, though, that race was run at a farcical tempo. It was just a sprint home, wasn't it? So obviously settling up on speed there under Ethan Brown. He had absolutely every possible chance and was quite dominant there in the end. And I can understand why people are liking his chances of the Caulfield Cup, given he's going to drop significantly in weight. I thought Maximal was great there. He's a horse who came over to Australia with a big reputation, trained by John O'Shea. He just needed to find a bit of firmer ground. And that's the Maximal probably people in Europe know. He was great running second. Young Verda wasn't too bad either. But I suppose probably the disappointment of the race might have been Profondo. I'm not quite sure where he's going with him at the moment. He seems to be paddling a little bit in the one spot. I don't know if Richard Lee can find the right race for him, but take nothing away from Smoke and Romans. He had everything to suit, and he got the job done in style there in the Turnbull Stakes.
And Inglis are looking for a new horse to run in their slot in the Everest.
Yeah, what do you do, Oz? I just
don't know.
I don't know where they turn now. It's obviously so late in the piece now. We're less than 2 weeks out. Snap Dance had a small issue. She's been withdrawn from the race, so there's not a whole lot of options out there. I heard you guys speaking about Private Eye a little bit earlier. Yep, he's in form. Excellent win the Gilguy Stakes down the straight there on the weekend. It might be a horse they turn to, or I don't know. But looking at the weather forecast, like, I'd be finding a wet tracker for sure. We're going to get stuck in rain again close to the weekend this week. Again, the forecast for the next 2 weeks looks like we'll get some more rain closer to Everest Day, the back end of next week as well. So I think it's fair to say we're working with a very heavily rain-affected track in a couple of weeks' time. Just got to try and find a horse out there who's still in the picture.
You might know this, Adam, or may not know it, but the chances of swapping tracks in the lead-up to a big event, now, with the Everest, and we've got all this rain predicted, can they just swap it, or is it too hard? Like, can they just go from Randwick to Rose Hill to look after the track? It's just never considered like that.
Well, potentially they could, Loz, but I doubt they'd do that for a meeting like the Everest. Probably more to the point is that Randwick's going to be racing 4 weeks in a row by the time we get to the Everest.
Yeah, you mean this week?
I mean this week. Yeah, I don't mean for the Everest. I mean for this week.
Sorry, potentially. No doubt at all. There could be a chance because given Randwick's had a heavy workload, and I need to look at this in the future as well because you want to just try and give it that break, that week off between the Everest, say the meeting we had in the weekend, the Epsom and the Everest. And I'm not quite sure why we have to run that Silver Eagle meeting at Randwick this week. I'm sure people will say, well, the Spring Champions on as well. We need to have that meeting there at Randwick. But I would love to see Randwick get a little bit of a break, given the weather we've had this year has just been horrendous, hasn't it? And the track is tight. It raced fairly well, I thought, on the weekend, but it's had a huge workload. So whether they go down that path this week, I doubt.
It's probably too hard, isn't it, with all corporates and all that type of stuff?
The corporates is a massive issue, like, given how many bookings they'd have for this week for this Saturday. But I think in the future, it's something they need to look at.
The connections are very elegant. I wonder how much regret, I guess, they have now on taking this path to send the horse to France after it failed yet again in that, 2,800-metre Group 1 on Saturday.
Yeah, I sat up and watched that race on Saturday night, Jared, and you could just tell after two or three furlongs, you just had that sick feeling. She was back buried along the fence in the second half of the field. She was over-racing and throwing her head about, and you just thought, this is not going to end very well, is it? And it didn't, to be honest. And again, I don't want to be too harsh on her because she probably had excuses. They went at a very dawdling tempo again. It just turned into a sprint home. And from where she was never going to be in the finish. But having said that, that's three times in the hour where she's probably run below expectations. And just goes to show how hard it is to travel horses the other side of the world, in particular at the back end of their careers. Nothing's really gone right so far. Mark Zara, I saw, made some comments after the race saying, don't give up on her yet. Maybe give her one more run at Royal Ascot and the Champion Stakes. I think it might be. But I tell you what, nothing's going to plan at all at the moment. And I'm a big believer in, I want to see champions go out on the right note. I want to see them leave a right legacy. Nothing's going to take away her 11 Group 1 wins in Australia and the Melbourne Cup win. But I tell you what, her legacy is probably being tainted, I'd say, just a little bit at the moment with what's happened over there in Europe.
Do you make it the grand final?
Penrith are outstanding, aren't they, Jared? Just a different class, aren't they? You could tell from the very early stage of that game probably as early as the first try, to be fair, that there's only going to be one result in that match, and they're just an outstanding football team. I don't want to take too much away from Parramatta. They've had a great season to make the grand final, but clearly they were second best on the day on Sunday night there. And just the evolution of guys like Dylan Edwards, Brian Toto, they're a special, special football team, and probably rightly we can start comparing them to the best teams of the NRL era. And I would say they're right up there, if not the best we've seen in the NRL era in the last 25, 30 years. So well done to Ivan Cleary, all the staff out there at Penrith, Brian Fletcher, Matt Cameron, have done an amazing job. And, yeah, what a football team.
How's the voice going, mate?
Oh, I'm struggling softly. sorry.
No, all good, all
better
good.
Than mine.
The little fella's been crook last couple of days, and he's passed it on. So we'll do our best to get through the week.
No, good on you, mate. Have a good day.
See you, boys.